Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to The Stack. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And baby, on The Stack, we talk about a ton of books that come out this week. Let's kick it off talking about Doctor Strange number one from Marvel, written by Jed McKay, art by Pasquale Ferry, Andy McDonald, and Ian Herring. Doctor Strange, if you couldn't tell from the title, he's alive. He's back.
Whoa,
he died for a while, but he's back now. It's all good.
He didn't die for that long.
Not that long, but he is back. Well, he's hanging out with Clea. And a lot of this issue is reestablishing him in the Marvel Universe, as well as what's going on with Wong and his agents of Wand, who are magic shield agents, essentially. So there's a lot of setup in this book, but Jed McKay, reliable writer. Justin, I know you're a big fan, so how did you feel about
Justin,
this return of Stephen Strange?
Well, I am a huge Jed McKay fan. All the Black Cat stuff that Jed's been doing over the past few years. I also love Pasquale Ferry on art. I feel like this is a great combination. Oh, nice. Gives Doc Strange a nice, clean, new look. I think it's funny that both Scarlet Witch and Doctor Strange are sort of like, we're open for business. Just walk through this door that's slightly more magical than this other door. But that's fun. It's still a good premise. I like the sort of, we get to see Doctor Strange is weak. The tone is a little fun. Doctor Strange has a good sense of humor, which I like. There's some relationship stuff, some larger stuff. I'm super excited for this run. It's a great jumping on point for some great Strange.
I mean, the thing is, we had this magical, tripped out Doctor Strange. We had this magical, tripped out Doctor Strange story before this. And so this isn't as, like, amazing or as, visually entertaining as that was. Although the art on this is super tight bananas. It's just a little different. We came from this, like, really kind of stylized, interesting, unique look.
Oh,
this,
you're talking about the Doctor Strange Fall Sunrise, which is
right. I am. Yes,
a different book, not in this continuity. It's not telling the same story.
Oh, it's still Doctor Strange book. So shut the fuck up, then.
Sure, but it doesn't take place in the correct order. That is something that takes place earlier in the timeline.
Okay. But I mean, I get it. Pete, you really liked that book because it was super trippy. This is definitely more like sort of mainstream, great, superheroic Doctor Strange stuff. So it's a slightly different flavor, but it takes a lot of flavors to make the great stew that is our stack.
Yeah, I hear you. It's just when you're
the weekly stew.
Yeah, it's just when you're, you know, you really love something and then they change it a little bit. You know, you can have some feelings about it. It's okay.
Well, that's like being mad if, say, the fall sunrise was setting and you were like, no, the sun's gone. What do we do? It's dark.
I yell at the sun every night when it goes down.
I know. Honestly, we're very, very worried about you.
Yeah. It's a little more like if there were two unrelated sunrises and you were like, what the fuck? There's this sunrise over here and it doesn't connect to this sunrise. This sucks.
Good thing Pete didn't grow up on Tatooine.
Here's my one qualm about this book is I really liked it. Well, no. I thought the art was really good. I thought the writing was really good. But I spent I'm going to agree with Pete now. I spent a lot of the time of this book being like, what's the take, though? We've seen this before. It felt like an extension in particular of Donny Cates' run to me. But three-quarters of the way through the book, some stuff starts to happen that really changes up the situation, throws in a mystery, throws in some riffs, and I'm glad they got to that point because I was enjoying it. I liked it as a Doctor Strange book, but with a number one, I want to take as strong as Scarlet Witch that feels like something that is wholly new that I am reading.
Well, Justin, let me throw this out, wait, before you just, Justin, let's just sit in this moment a little bit, you know? No, Alex agrees with me and he disagrees with you. This is just, let's just sit here for a little bit longer. Oh, it's nice.
It's very funny that a moment ago we were like, isn't it crazy how Pete screams at the sun? And Alex immediately was like, yes. And I agree with this madman. So I feel like I'm sitting pretty in the non-screaming at the nighttime guy. But let me just respond. Like, because what I love about Jed MacKay's writing in particular is the characterization. Like, the Black Cat book that he just ran for years on wasn't, like, super premise heavy, but it was just, like, great storytelling from a plot narrative point of view and great character work in each issue, in each panel. And so, like, that's what I'm looking forward to here. Something where so many comics are, like, big premise and then that's sort of the whole engine. And Jed MacKay is specifically good at the opposite of that. So I'm here for that.
Well, let's talk about another character-driven book, Batman, One Bad Day, Ra's al Ghul, number one from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Ivan Reis. Like the rest of these books, this is exploring one of Batman's villains. This is, I felt, a surprisingly more traditional Ra's al Ghul tale, talking about the Lazarus Pits, talking about the environment and man's destruction of it. You get a classic shirt-off Batman sword fight with Ra's al Ghul going on here, very reminiscent of the Neil Adams stuff back in the day.
Yeah. What you guys and the think Batman about animated series.
Batman animated series. Exactly. What do you guys think about this one?
This I continue to love these One Bad Day stories. They're really fun. They make some big choices. I think this was a very interesting take on someone who's been around for a while, you know. And I just thought it was, very unique and cool. And they had amazing covers for this. I just think the art was super tight bananas. And I've been loving these collection of stories here. This is just really cool.
I agree. Ivan's art is great here. Really good matchup. Again, this is not a bad day. This is actually a great day. Ra's has a great day in this book.
Yeah, so, but when he's having a great day, we're having a bad day.
That depends on you taking the plot.
Here's
well,
what I
if
take,
I'm one of the 27 people killed, I'm going to say it's a bad day.
Oh, in the DC universe, you're an evil multi-billionaire? That's what you're saying, Pete?
The bad day is his dog dies, right? Like, I know that sounds like a
John
joke,
Wick.
But that's legitimately what happens, is this wolf or dog or whatever that he has raised for a really long
time. Yeah, it's a fucking wolf,
man.
It's not just a regular dog.
Ah, woo, it's a wolf, man. Right?
Yeah. A wolf is just a
I don't know.
A wolf is just a dog who's having one bad day.
One right? bad day, a wolf.
My dog's one bad day away from straight up killing me.
Oh, man, don't you talk shit about Pip, because Pip don't slip, bro.
Punisher has a dog and a wolf chained up on a roof on a chimney, and he's like, you two, you're one bad day away.
Which one do you feed? Which one do you feed?
Exactly.
We have a bunch of things going on here. Lots of metaphors and some posters and T-shirts on the Punisher. Anyway, this is a good book.
And in those moments, that's when I, the Punisher, was carrying you down the beach. that's those footprints. That's why there's boot prints on that beach, bro.
And when I looked down, I saw a line of bullets. And that's when I knew I was shooting you.
I was shooting the ground and hovering a little bit. I was shooting so many bullets.
Sort of like hopping up a little bit. It wasn't flying necessarily, but I do
hoisted
that
by
now.
My own petard. What I was going to say about this, were you going to say
something about this book, or did you want to?
No, I actually like this story. I thought this is a good book. The moral complication of it, I thought, was really cool. Really, like this, if you're a Damian Wayne fan, not that he's in this a ton,
also,
but it's sort of like the tis two poles.
Batman kind of loses in this issue. It's a rare loss for Batman.
He has one bad day, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
Now, guys, are you getting access to Lazarus Pit? You jumping in there every couple weeks?
I was thinking about that while I was reading it, and 100% definitely.
Yeah.
Justin, if you're going to be there every time I come out to tell me everything's going to be okay, it just seems like it'll be worth it.
I'll be there. I'll be in the pool with you. We'll have our bathing suits on, a beach ball. Hey, Pete, jump in the Laz Pit. Let's heal up a little bit. What's the weakest, like, what's the least sick you'd be to jump? Like, you got a sniffle, you're like, I gotta jump in the Laz for him.
I'll tell you
stub
what,
your toe.
Earlier today, and this is a true story, I got locked in the bathroom for 15 minutes down here in my basement. 100%, if there was a Lazarus Pit outside, I'd be like, I'm getting that for a while.
Just jump in the Lazarus toilet that you have.
Wait, because you had 15 minutes of inconvenience? You were just going to kill yourself?
I was going nuts, man. I almost tore the door down. I literally physically ripped the door handle off of the door.
All right, She-Hulk.
And that's what locked you in? Or no, you later.
It's a whole story. I don't want to get into it. We're only two titles.
Like, did it lock you while you were in there?
No, nobody else was home, and my phone was outside the bathroom. So.
There it is. That's the real thing.
And I was going feral. I was like, There was a wolf and a dog inside of me, and they were one bad day away from becoming each other. Can we move on to the next book? The Neighbors, number one from Boom Studios, written by Jude Ellison S. Doyle, art by Letizia Cattanici. This is perfect for fans of James Tynan's work in particular. Mm. It's very reminiscent of Something is Killing the Children in terms of the art style. It's also very reminiscent of The Closet in terms of the content of the book. This is about a family that moves to a new neighborhood where all the neighbors, super weird, super terrifying, horrible things are going on. There's some interesting stuff going on in terms of how trans issues affect a family because one of the partners in a marriage, they're moving, presumably, because one of them came out as trans. It's affecting the kids in different ways. The horror ramps up very quickly over the course of this issue. I love the art style. Like I said, if you're a fan of either of those books, I think you're really going to dig this one as well.
Yeah, the tone, you're spot on. This is a very James Tynan style book, down to the great sort of twist, I guess, at the end. There's a sort of a double twist where something happens and then there's a couple words that are used that really twisted again, and I thought that was really well done. Art is great. The way that the panels, the art goes into, like, sort of details on hands and snakes and stuff, just really nice horror, cinematic horror stuff here.
Yeah, when I read this and I got to the end, I was like, nope, no, this is too fucking scary. This is scary as fuck. No fucking way. This is...
That's why you jumped in the Lazarus kiddie pool out in front of your house.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, no fucking way. This is too scary. And it's great. It's a great kind of scary that's very impressive, but I could not deal with it. It was...
It's definitely a legitimately scary book, and I thought of you, Pete, while I was reading it because I knew that was going to be your reaction. It's a little too much for you, so... And I don't mean this dismissively. If you are a scaredy cat like Pete, this is not the book for you. Yeah. But for everybody else, great stuff. Very excited to read more.
Scaredy kitty. I say anytime I read a comic book that's too scary for Pete, I send him an edible arrangement.
Oh, thanks, man. I wish that was true.
Punisher number 10 from Marvel, written by Jason Aaron, art by Jesus Saez and Paul Azaceta. The Punisher is continuing to rise or fall, depending on how you look at it, to become the avatar of the Beast. Meanwhile, Maria, his wife, who's back to life, is finding out a lot more about what's going on in the background.
Maria, Pete, his wife.
Pete, take it away. Other than the singing, please.
This is just going so hard and is so much fun. There's so many amazing badass moments. Also, the Avengers having the worst bad timing awards for showing up as soon as the Punisher goes, I'm quitting, I'm done. I was like, what? Now you guys show up after he's fucking done? But it should be interesting to see where it goes from there. Where they were like, it's a bad day if you're one of the worst people in the world, was just great. I just started clapping. I was having so much fun with this book. It's really interesting. So we're getting to know the Punisher a lot in this, as well as his wife and their connection and all of that. It's very interesting. This is very cool. I'm just having a blast. Thank you, Jason Aaron. Thank you.
I love the way the art style switched from the present sort of scarier, grittier story. It's actually less gritty, I feel like. The more darker reds and blacks of the present day and the flashbacks, which are grainier and whatnot, looking at the Punisher's past. Very cool. And this is actually secretly – the Punisher isn't – we're talking about him, but we're not really riding with him. This is really a Maria story, and we're really getting to see her and her take. And I love the way that she sort of – likes Frank's descent into becoming the Punisher, as we're learning. And she's actually more like him than I think we've ever thought, a character that was only ever murdered and never explored. So to actually do that in such an interesting way, I think, is excellent. And I got to say, to have Cap, Black Widow, Wolverine, Doctor Strange, and Moon Knight show up and be like, hey, let's get the gun guy. He's being a dick. And the Punisher is more super jacked, overpowered than ever. They're going to murder these dudes. Moon Knight is, it's done. Especially his series is mediocre. Get him out. He's dead.
Yeah.
Great stuff. First off, don't just say things as serious as mediocre. Fuck you for bringing that up.
Okay, so you want the Moon Knight to kill Punisher?
No, I'm just saying you don't have to bring that up. That's not relevant.
I like how every issue you bring up a new matchup for Pete to hurt his feelings.
I'm trying to hurt his feelings.
No, you just get it.
I'm not trying to. Yeah. Okay, you're God.
Oh, Pete, you really want the Punisher to kill your mom? That's what you want, Pete?
Nope.
Your mom is going to show up next issue, and I guess you want your mom to kill the Punisher or vice versa. You're going to have to make a decision.
That's going to be
Milestone.
Now he's being mean.
I'm being mean. Milestone 30th Anniversary Special number 1 from DC Comics, written by Evan Narcisse, Nicholas Draper Ivy, Stephanie Williams, and Jeffrey Thorne. Art by Atagan Ilhan, Chris Cross, Nicholas Draper Ivy, Yasmin Flores Montinez, and Sean Damian Hill. This is exactly what it sounds like, a series of stories that loop into various points in the Milestone history, some that have existed, some that have never existed, that they're teasing things going forward. A lot of it all hooked around Static in particular. Pete, I know you're the big Milestone fan on the podcast. What did you think about this?
This was awesome. First off, amazing covers, just really such a cool collection of stories. Dexter Vines is killing it. I love the feel of the art. It has this kind of like 80s feel, but it's updated a little bit more. I also really love the Batman Beyond and Static story that we got in this. This was such a cool, I just feel like this is such a great collection of comics and had such a not only interesting story, but an artistic story to tell.
Yeah, agree. Great variety in the stories, but that Static Beyond story I thought was so good. Yeah. Definitely a fave, and the art that really stuck to the Batman Beyond stuff, but really brought Static in, I thought was super cool.
It really worked.
I agree. Just speaking as not a Milestone fan, the first story is very much like Crisis on Infinite Milestone Earth, bringing them all together.
Yep.
That was a very deep dive for me, somebody who doesn't know much about the Milestone stuff. So I was a little worried that the rest of the book was going to be like that, just like for hardcore fans only. But it's not. Like we're saying, the rest of the stories are very fun, very accessible, and with some great art throughout. So it's a good collection. And this is such a little thing, but just structurally, DC doesn't do this enough. They do this for the Milestone books. They have title pages between everything where they give the credits of everybody and they give a little bit of a recap. And I appreciate that so much. We read so many comics to just have that little bit of, oh, okay, this is what this is about. And then go into it. I thought it was phenomenal.
Yeah, really. It's great.
Dead Romans, number 1 from Image Comics, written by Fred Kennedy, art by Nick Marinkov. And do you think this has something to do with Dead Kennedys? Because you got Dead Romans and Fred Kennedy. I feel like there's a connection there.
Stop.
Yeah, strong.
I mean, musically, sweet shout out, but other than that, you go fuck yourself. Yeah,
that's your conspiracy theory. Wow.
Wow, you're a real F-bomb dropper in this episode, Pete. What did you think about this book?
I think it's worth it for the art alone. I mean, you got some amazing colors, shapes, love the blocking.
So many shapes.
Oh my God.
Honestly, most of this comic is shapes.
Hey, no, fuck yourself, because they do like this interesting thing where it's like people become like more blocky in the background and different stuff. And I think it's a cool stylized choice that works really well.
I have a question for you, Pete. When you say it's worth it for the art alone, does that mean, and this is a real, very real question, does that mean you didn't like the story for real, or you didn't connect as much with that?
Well, no, it means different things for different stories. For this, I was just so impressed with the artwork, because we see so many comic book and a lot of superhero kind of driven stuff. So to see characters that were blockier and different shapes and like different colors kind of spurting out, it really makes a huge difference. And someone who's reading a lot of similar stuff, it really sticks out. So, I just really want to tip my hat to it and say, as someone who reads a lot of comics, when you get something that's new and exciting, it makes it just so much more refreshing and nicer to add to your kind of pull list, you know?
Great. And follow-up question, when you say super tight bananas, does that mean you're being held hostage and that's a cry for help where you're like, please come rescue me?
No.
Because I'm trapped here.
I'm just so impressed with the art. It's just
well, super tight. I'm going to agree with Pete again. I do think the art was very good in this book. To give you a little sense of the story, it is about a general, I guess, in the Roman army who is in love with a slave. He keeps promising her that maybe she's going to be his queen someday if he ever becomes king. Of course, they get attacked. They get thrown apart. She's left alone. Presumably, the story is going to be her growing up to be a badass and fighting her way back to him or something like that while he fights his way back to her. I did feel like the writing was a little convoluted in this first issue.
Yeah, I think it lacked a little clarity of what was happening, I feel like, especially in the beginning. But I do like the sort of plot that they've laid out. Like, I think it is interesting. I would like to see both of them, our general sort of dealing with the bureaucracy of his fight, because they're in, like, Europe, basically, up in Germany, what would be later become Germany, out of their normal area. So it has the opportunity to go in a lot of different directions. And so I'm down to keep reading this.
Yeah, same. Definitely want to check out a second issue now that they've set up the situation. Let's talk about She-Hulk number 11 from Marvel, written by Rainbow Rowell, art by Andres Genelet. This is a big-time ship issue for She-Hulk and Jack of Hearts. They can't really touch anymore because Jack of Hearts is now radioactive again. She-Hulk still really wants to be with him. Jack of Hearts is clearly stepping back. We've talked about this before.
This is heartbreaking. The two of them together are just magic. And to see this awkward kind of dinner that doesn't work and has us as well as them questioning their relationship is heartbreaking. And then some fucking new guy comes in. Just all fucking
sexy gentleman thief comes in who I think is going to present another option for She-Hulk.
I'm worried about it because I'm shipping this other relationship, but now this new guy shows up and he's thrown off his mask and he doesn't care. And oh man!
And you saw him throw his mask off, so you were like, "That guy's good looking. That's a problem." That's what you thought, right, Pete? As a rom-com expert, like legit, you're a rom-com expert. You watch more rom-coms than anyone I know.
Yeah, that's a sign when it's like something gone awry and all of a sudden two people who maybe shouldn't be connecting all of a sudden are connecting and looking to each other's eyes. It's dangerous.
I mean, Jack said I'll save you some garlic bread and that would be enough to have me coming home to him.
You're goddamn right, buddy. Yeah, I hear
love
you.
That. I love the fact, and this hasn't been necessarily every issue because we had some big Hulk fights going on previously, I think an issue or two back, but when is the last time or ever we've gotten a pure romance comic from Marvel? The entire time we've been talking about comics. Love this. Love also, the success.
Even when they launched their romance comics like line, it was all a bunch of like fucked up stuff that kept happening. It was like, oh, okay, not what you sold me. So it is really nice. And also the front half of this book is like a superhero fight club, which is fun. Great character choices. Volcana, a character we don't ever really see much of. Like, this is all fun. And then you get into the real plucking the heartstrings, right, Pete?
What's great about She-Hulk is she is such a great character. There's all this great kind of violence and action you can do with her, but also these small moments with her are just so powerful and you feel them. I feel like there's such a great range with her and I think they're using her in a great way, especially in this title. And it's heartbreaking. The most kind of heartfelt stuff are just these small moments in this horrible date. And you just really feel it, man.
Yeah. I just want to give a quick shout out. If you are enjoying this book, last night I read, and this is an older book, but a book called Pumpkin Heads, which is a graphic novel by Rainbow Rowell with art by Faith Aaron Hicks. Heads. Have you read it, Pete?
Yeah, holy shit. Yeah, it's a blast from the past.
So good. It is about two people who work at basically like the Disneyland of pumpkin patches, and it's their last night working there. They've been the MVPs working there for several years. And the guy has always been in love with this girl who he doesn't know the name of, who works at the fudge place across the way from their place. They work at the succotash place. So it's very silly and very over the top. And so they make it their mission to try to track her down so he can tell her how he feels about her over the course of the night. you can kind of figure out how things are going just based on the situation, but it's so fun. It's so charming. Again, if you're enjoying She-Hulk and you're enjoying Rainbow Rowell's work on it, highly recommend checking it out. It was such a delight. Let's move on to talk about what I know is one of Pete's favorite issues of the week, DC's Legion of Bloom, number one from DC Comics, written by Ashley Allen, Kenny Porter, Zach Thompson, Calvin Kasulke, Julia Anta, Gavin Scott, Travis Moore, and David Wildgoss. Art by Isaac Goodhart, Brian Level, Hayden Sherman, Vitor Kafagi, Alan Pasalacqua, Adagun Ilhan, Travis Moore, and Riley Rosmo. This is a collection of stories kicking off spring in the DC Universe. Pete, why did this one hit for you so hard on this first day of spring as we are taping it?
Well, first off, like, the Riley Rosmo Superman stuff was just,
hard agree. Hard agree. Really great.
Get you in the feels. Just some amazing, amazing stuff. It just looks so cool, and you kind of really feel the emotions with the character. I think they did such a great job. But also, like, the most adorable Captain Carrot, like, I couldn't believe that story. It was so cute. Took me so by surprise. I was like, Captain Carrot, all right, here we go. What are we going to do here? But I thought it was such a fun choice. Also, the Blue Beetle, the Swamp Thing stuff was great. Then Dove. I had such a great time. The Poison Ivy story, where she's just hanging out in a flower shop doing good for people. Oh, I felt like they did such a good job of, like, having this cool theme and bringing in this collection of stories. Art, of course, was super tight bananas across the board. A lot of really fun choices being made. I just feel like this is a smart idea because it's like taking great stories, putting them with great artists, and just letting them run in such a creative, cool way. It's a blast.
Spring is here. I liked a lot of those stories as well, especially the Superman one, the Swamp Thing one I enjoyed. But the one you didn't shout out that I really liked was the Batman story, the second story by Zach Thompson and Hayden Sherman, which had sort of a scary horror element. Great last panel, I thought. But a lot of fun in these pages.
Order and Outrage, number one from Dark Horse Comics, written by Jim Starlin, art by Rags Morales. This is a book that takes place, I believe, in space, and things happen in a non-sequential order throughout the book. What did you guys think about this one?
Wags, what did you think about this one?
That's a great question. My main thought is I'd love to hear what you guys thought.
Interesting, because nice. My classic volley. I was wondering about what you thought.
Yeah, this is incomprehensible nonsense that is beautifully drawn by Rags Morales. I'm sorry. I love Jim Starlin. Like, on an individual basis, if you look at this page by page, if I saw this in a museum, I'd be like, cool, these are some wild space pages by Jim Starlin, who knows how to write this stuff. But every page, and maybe this is the point, and maybe I'm mentioning it, he keeps jumping from scenes where it's like, this is one of my least favorite things anyway, but going like, then, now, because that's so nonspecific in terms of a time period. Just like, say when we're going to, and it's fine, or indicate it visually because we're reading a comic book. But he keeps changing up the words throughout the book.
Sometimes it's like, it's before.
Yeah, then, now, before, after, here, there, far, near.
Everywhere, everywhere.
Small.
Here's a cock and balls.
I didn't know what was going on. And maybe you guys knew. Yes, there is a cock and balls in the book. Thank you for bringing
that up. That's not anything to be mad about. That happened.
Cock balls. What?
Honestly, I
always go into something wanting to like something, and this one I came out completely flummoxed. Did you guys feel differently? How'd you feel about it?
I think I felt as flummoxed as you. If anything, for me, it was just like, this book is moving so fast. It felt like it had to be written in a hurry or something. But the art is so meticulously done.
So you were saying it's like too fast, maybe too for us?
Excuse me? I do think it
you
is.
You said that as if that was a pun, and it's not.
It is outrage. It's this order and outrage, more like out of order and outrage.
Ooh,
right, guys?
I see what you did there.
And there are some of the little vignettes that I feel like, oh, this is interesting. Like the one that Pete was mentioning at the end with these two characters in bed. Like this scene is interesting, but like to Alex's
She's
point, it's hard to tell.
She's scared for her life.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious what it means. It's hard to tell how this scene connects with a lot of the stuff that came before and sort of what it's amounting to. And it did feel like we were like, all right, we got to keep going. It's like, why are you in such a rush? It's a comic.
And one of the things is that like Rax Morales is, like you were saying, such a detailed artist who draws in this very DC classic superhero style. If it was something that was supposed to be avant-garde, throwing you into these different situations through these different time periods, that it's not clear how you exactly connect, you need a different artist for that. It needs to be something that breaks apart the art and down into its component pieces, the same way the storytelling is doing. Otherwise, it doesn't necessarily make sense.
Or even multiple artists or multiple styles of art, perhaps.
Yeah.
It was jumping around a lot. It was hard to, once I kind of got the idea of something, it was on to something else. So I just think that, like, there's a lot of great ideas. I'm looking forward to maybe another issue too, when maybe it's found a pacing or something, kind of picking back up with it.
Wasp number 3 from Marvel, written by Al Ewing, art by Kasia Ni. It's funny that we're following up the last issue with this one, because this is the most broken apart issue of Wasp. They are two wasps have been taken over by old enemies who are controlling their minds and breaking them out into different time periods and realities, though it probably exists just in their mind. I've been very into the series, but this is another one that I had a hard time holding on to. Justin?
Agree. I really like Al Ewing, and especially this felt like almost a companion book to the Ant-Man series that we all liked earlier that Al Ewing also wrote. And this book, I feel it's so hard to follow, and I don't know really what the point is. I feel like it's a lot of characters like, oh, they're both wasps. They're mad at these other characters for very particular reasons. It feels like there's some avenging that needs to happen. But it doesn't ever sort of come together why and what they're doing. And it feels like none of the characters have control of the situation. Even the villain feels like he's like, ha, come get me, maybe.
I really like the creature design and the art. I think it's very cool and unique. I felt like this was very fast paced, which I think also made it kind of a little bit hard to kind of roll with. But, yeah, I thought it was very interesting and kind of sucked me in a way that I was like, maybe I'm not sure happening now, but I'm definitely going to kind of check back later.
This was very similar to me to Al Ewing's Defenders work in terms of breaking down reality. And it contrasted with the first two issues, which were pretty straightforward. I'm still curious to check out the last one because I like what they're doing with the series. And Cassiani's art is really gorgeous with the character designs, like Pete was saying. But this one was a hard one to hold on to. Nightwing 102 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor and C.S. Picott, art by Travis Moore and Eduardo Pensica. In this issue, Nightwing has been captured by the Smiling Man, a new villain who is coming after this little girl.
Freaking me the fuck out.
The goal of Neron. Neron, I think?
I say Neron, but Neron. I don't know.
Okay. It's one of those Magneto guys, I guess.
Yeah.
Anyway, he is coming after Nightwing, and Raven wants to go after him. We've been loving this book. Do we continue to love it?
Real quick, because I feel like we talk about Nightwing a lot. We all love Nightwing. Every issue is very good. On the count of three, let's say whether it's Magneto or Magneto. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Magneto. Great. That's all of us. Okay. Thanos or Thanos? Ready? 1, 2, 3.
Thanos. You say it wrong every time.
You say it wrong.
Why you don't tell me I'm wrong?
What did they say in the movies that we watched?
Different continuity. The comic book continuity may have a strong A.
Dark Side
or Dark Seed?
It's Dark Side, you fucker.
I don't know. I actually use both.
It's not Dark Seed. It's Dark Side.
It's Dark Side.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, so this Nightwing
comic... It's also Magneto, so...
this Nightwing comic is really great. I don't know what it is about somebody who's smiling when they're doing horrible things that creeps me the fuck out. The smiley guy was really giving me a lot of stress. So the kind of like the fact that we, you know, caught him. Stop. Both of you stop smiling. The fact that we caught him really just kind of like is a, just a, such a relief. It was such a huge, huge happy relief. And I feel great about it. And I'm having a blast with this comic.
Great review.
Great.
This, they really snuck this Teen Titans book into the underneath the Nightwing cover.
It's weird to me that they're doing a Titans book because that's what this is.
This is a full on Titans book. No, and like, I'm not, I don't mean to be super negative in that way, but I'm just surprised. Well, I'm not mad per se. Like I ride for Tom Taylor. It's a good Nightwing or it's a good Titans book, but the Nightwing stuff I've been really enjoying. So as long as we keep getting that and keep exploring that, that's cool. But this is truly just like an action Titans story. And then we have a backup that is like a sort of a mystery detective.
It's like if
story.
You went to the deli and you're like, hey, can I get a turkey sub? And they're like, yep, no problem. And you got the turkey sub, and then it was turkey and roast beef and salami with a little prosciutto on
so
it.
They added some nice
right?
stuff.
And
to
you're
it.
Like, yeah, this upgraded is good, it. And I like this, but that's not what I ordered.
Yeah, I ordered one Titan, and you gave me all of the great meat Titans that you have in your little bin there.
Yeah. Blue Book number 2 from Dark like Horse, sandwich. Written by James Tynion IV and Michael Avon Oeming, art by Michael Avon Oeming. In this book, we're following... What?
Can we talk more about sandwiches with each comic? You know, like each time we review a comic, we talk about a different sandwich? Was that
absolutely. This is like a fucked up, inside-out sandwich that's going to fuck you up.
Well, yeah. Yeah, what know. If you went to the deli and they put turkey on the outside and a piece of bread in the middle?
That's Blue Book number 2. Anyway, this book is following two stories. We are getting a story of a couple who was kidnapped by aliens and following them in the 1950s, I believe. And then the backup stories are quote-unquote true stories of alien abduction or meeting with others. In this case, it's some green people who are probably fairies. The backup story is entirely Michael Avon Oeming telling it. Amazing package. I love this book.
Another just great, super confidently written book by James Tynion. Like, it's so good. It's mysterious. There's a tension underlying it. Interesting time period, interesting focus. It's like exploring just straight up classic alien arrival stories. Michael Avon Oeming's art is really good. It's so spare, which very much his style, and it really matches with our front story. It's just great across the board.
Yeah, I really agree. JT4 is killing it. Also, the art...
I can't lose.
The art does such a great job of capturing these moments, and these kind of like still moments are so... The tension is so great in kind of these UFO encounter situations. It's just such a great team on this book. It's very interesting. It's unique. I mean, if you're not into UFO shit, then you probably won't like this. But other than that, it's really solid.
This also, I'll mention, feels like an extension of Department of Truth, even though it's a different series.
Interesting.
And this is top tier Michael Avon Oeming. He is just killing it on this book. The backup story looks like an illuminated manuscript come to life, and it is gorgeous. As much as I like the front story, this year, this one, the backup story was the top tier one for me. So great stuff. Ooh. Definitely pick up this book. Undiscovered Country, number 24 from Image Comics, written by Scott Snyder and Charles Soule, art by Giuseppe Camuncoli and Leonardo Marcello Grassi. We're finally finishing the time travel story that has been going on and moving on to the next zone of America towards the end of this issue, as well as
corn.
A big twist, the giant corn zone.
Yeah,
corn as well zone. As a big twist that's going to change everything about the book, potentially. What'd you think about this one?
I mean, this continues book, to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
It's just everything about it is wild. It's like similar types of adventure, but all the details are different. The characters are still just fighting their way through. Like, we got to get to the next zone. I was like, do you? You think the next one's going to be better? The corn's too big. The corn is too big in that zone. What if that corn starts popping? With global warming being what it is, perhaps in this world? I mean,
obviously, when you see giant corn, you got to think, okay, there's going to be a giant monster who eats this giant corn, because why else would it need to be this big?
See, I thought giant butter. Huh. And hopefully Big Salt, and then like some of those little corn holders so you don't have to get your hands.
Big Salt here, man, controlling every aspect of my life.
I'm not here for your Big Salt fucking you know takes. All right, I know you're.
What do you don't? You don't put salt in your corn? You don't put salt in your corn?
Butter, bro, butter.
Oh, butter. Can I give you a hot tip about corn? Here's what you want to do. Right, take the butter, you mash it with salt and pepper. Right, so you make like a compound butter there. If you want to put some herbs or whatever in there, you could probably do that as well.
We're not here. This is not like
now. This is important.
No, we do this.
It's important. You got to understand this. My kids don't like the herbs, so I usually just do it butter, salt, and pepper. Take it, rub it all over the corn, wrap it in tin foil, and then cook it, ideally on the grill, for like 20 minutes. Rotate it halfway. No, I know. So like it really soaks in there in the butter. So good.
Anyways,
Pete, before you don't, we all have a recipe to say on this episode. So like Alex is doing his, we talked about this. We were all going to have to, he got giant corn, he got giant corn and you're doing a Swamp Thing green hell salad. And I can't wait. I can't wait. And I'm doing,
What are you doing?
Great question.
What are you doing?
Damn them cheese balls. Damn them cheese balls is what you're
doing. Damn them cheese balls. Charles Soule is an amazing writer. These continue to be super creative and impressive. I mean, the one guy's writing a Transformer. It's like Shockwave. I was like, oh, that is fucking really cool. This is just continues to be super creative, very enjoyable. Each comic is a fucking crazy adventure, and I've been eating them up.
Just like giant corn. What year do you think we're going to have real Transformers? Because this is set in the future. Pete?
I'm going to say 2070.
Oh, wow. Much further. Maybe we won't live that long. put a year that you were going to see.
No, I'm going to come back as a fucking Decepticon and wreak havoc.
Wow.
Wow.
Amazing Spider-Man number 22 from Marvel, written by Zeb Wells, art by John Romita Jr. We're finally getting into the arc, finding out what has happened to Mary Jane and Spider-Man. Turn on what happened is they got sucked into an alternate dimension, which is run by totems, where a evil god being is trying to kill Spider-Man to unravel the web of life. Leads almost directly into the place where we found Spider-Man, I think, at the beginning of Amazing Spider-Man number one. Justin, I know you were very excited about this, so take it away.
I mean, we had this big swing where Spider-Man and Mary Jane not getting along. Mary Jane has a kid and with another guy. And we're like, 6 months, how did that happen? Like, truly, how did that physically happen, A? And B, like, what's the deal? It was a big mystery that has been just hanging in the air for quite some time. And this issue, to get into some spoilers, like a heartbreaking moment where Peter Parker, Spider-Man, is the one who is sort of under threat here. And so he's trying to save Mary Jane, get her back to their Earth. And instead, she flips it and lets him escape so that he isn't immediately killed. They love each other. They're both trying to sacrifice for each other. And because of that, and time works differently in this dimension, like she is there with this guy. And obviously we're going to see more what happens there in the future issue. But I thought it was just a great heartbreaking, grounded sort of way to get into like how this relationship change happened. And I think we still have to find out why everyone on Earth hates Spider-Man. And maybe that's also where we're going to find out, because that's where Zeb Wells' run started. Everyone's mad at Spider-Man, and Mary Jane is married to another guy.
Pete?
All right, so this is very hard, because this is just about before it's all going to go to shit. So it's just this magical moment where it's a sweet pocket, where you've got a Spider-Man story that has him and Mary Jane in love, sacrificing for each other. And John Romita Jr. is doing the art. So it's a magical little pocket here before it all goes to shit.
And just to mention, when you're talking about a sweet pocket, you're talking about like a hot pocket with cake inside, right?
That's right.
Sweet pocket, they say.
Yeah.
And every relationship has a sweet pocket. I still remember mine with my wife.
Oh, man. There was that sweet pocket I remember in the beginning.
Yeah.
Anyways, I think it's one of those things where I don't want to keep going forward. I want to stay here, but this is Great art and a fantastic story. And what we love about Spider-Man and MJ and the reason that they are the best ship, it's going to be shitty and sad when we move on and find out some other bullshit story. But right now it's just sweet. It's Peter Parker and MJ together, willing to risk it all for each other. And it's a perfect scenario.
We're about to enter more of a savory pocket, where it's less sweet, less cakey.
Yeah, not for everybody.
Wonder Woman number 790.
Wait, you know what, Alex? What's your take on this?
I have some reservations just in terms of the whole totem thing and Spider-Man dealing with gods and stuff like that. Not really my thing. I like it when he is more dealing with realistic threats. There are stories that have made it work, and I do think the emotion is there and the tension is there. And like we've been talking about, John Romita Jr., unimpeachable in terms of propulsive action in the art. So I like what they're doing here. It's just the tone.
You hate totems.
The villain.
You're a totem hater.
Yeah, the villain doesn't quite work for me.
That's fair, and I agree. The villain is a little underbaked, if you didn't put your Hot Pocket in the microwave for long.
Right, and it's still, like we talked about with the last issue, depends a lot on, you remember Amazing Spider-Man 535, right? That's one of your favorite issues? And it's not. I don't remember any of this. Wow. So I can gather it, but I don't have the emotional resonance of what's going on here yet. Wonder Woman 797 from DC Comics, written by Becky Cloonan and Michael W. Conrad, Josie Campbell, art by Amon K. Nahulpin and Caitlin Yarsky. If you haven't read Lazarus Planet, Revenge of the Gods, number one, definitely check that out because it leads directly into this issue where Wonder Woman has been captured by Hera and the rest of the Wonder Squad, as I like to call them, is on the warpath.
The Wonder Squad.
How are you guys feeling about this?
This continues to be fantastic. The art's super tight bananas. You get the squirrel is back, so that's great. I mean, there's a lot of cool action. We're moving the story forward. Wonder Woman is doing great. I've been loving this. Becky Cloonan is killing the game.
I mean, we've been really on board with this run. I'm trying to think, because we got the announcement that Tom King is taking over this book. And I feel like each of these issues that we have left are more precious. And I feel like we don't have that many left, a handful.
We really don't. It's a little bit of a bummer because they have been doing such a good job. Obviously, I'm looking forward and curious to see what Tom King is going to do on it.
And then maybe Becky will come back, hopefully. You know what I mean?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Earth Divers, number 6 from IDW, written by Stephen Graham Jones, art by David Gianfelice. We'll definitely talk about spoilers for this one. So this is Earth Divers Kill Columbus is the first arc of this book where they've gone back in time to try to kill Christopher Columbus to change the course of American history. Here's the big spoiler here. They kill Columbus.
Got him.
Don't spoil it for everybody.
Got him.
Oh, man.
I was in Columbus Circle today. And that statue's gone.
Wow. Not to make this a theme of the podcast, this was the hardest issue for me to hold on to in terms of jumping around in time. Really like the art here. I really like what's going on. But there's a lot of stuff, particularly in the future timeline, that I'm not 100% sure how it connects to everything else. And I think part of that is this is an ongoing series. We're going to see them jump to the American Revolution next. So there's still mysteries that need to be dragged out. But the past timeline with Columbus stuff, really well done and very tense.
Yeah, the guy makes a sale out of some corpses. So that was really reminiscent.
Sometimes you got to use skin. You know what I mean? You got to be when you're on the sea. You got to
That's
where the expression skin in the game comes from.
Oh, I don't believe
that. Yeah, I had to go to a wedding. I didn't have a dress shirt. So skin shirt.
There you go.
Skin smart. In the game, man. Skin in the game.
Smart.
I agree with you, Alex. This was a little hard to under. But when you said this
starts the collar, though, that's the tough part.
It's hard. Skin. Well, you want to use some sort of some really particular skin, like bottom of the foot skin, so you can really keep the.
Oh, it's smart. Yeah.
So you get a stiffer skin, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That
makes sense. Your skin tailor?
Yeah, who's your skin guy?
It takes a lot. But what I was saying, Alex, was this the hardest of this series for you to follow, or of all the books we've talked about? Because I think we had a lot of time jumping.
No, of this series. Because I think there's been a lot of there was a lot of jumping around in terms of the timelines that happened here. That to me, when I got to the end, they were like, next up, Earth Divers, American Revolution, or whatever they're calling that one.
Yeah.
That to me felt like, oh, okay, that explains it. They were holding on to some stuff. They were not putting everything on the table in this first series, which otherwise we've had two very straightforward stories being told with the future timeline and with this past timeline. Here, there was a lot of jumping around, and it was a little harder to follow.
And I wonder if we were reading the trade of this, if it would be there'd be a little more clarity, because it does feel like after Columbus is killed, we jump forward and it's sort of like, the stuff we thought was going to happen didn't happen, but it makes me not quite remember the details of what they were doing. It was hard to sort of sew the whole thing together, I think, at the end. And maybe on a trade read, you might have it more present.
That's fair.
Well, I just want to say I like the idea of this, and I think the execution is interesting, and there's a lot of fun historical twists on things that we know that happen, and then they're making different choices, which is great, and it's a fun idea to explore. But I do agree with the Zelvatron, where it bounces around so much, it's hard to kind of like follow what's going on. But I am excited because they are taking big swings to kind of check out what happens next.
Yeah. Let's talk about Vanish number 5 from Image Comics, written by Donny Cates, art by Ryan Stegman. In this issue, we get a classic, is he actually in an insane asylum? Is this actually happening or not? And then we kind of
speaking of jumping around, another one that jumps around all over the place.
We're just bouncing around the room, right, guys? I mean, this was also, this is done, yep. This
is
done famous.
That's a Bahish reference.
That's for you, Pete, because I don't listen to those guys. But this was done famously in the
specific lyric from a very
in the television show Moon Knight that we all are on board with, and no one would ever say anything mean about it. That's for sure.
100%.
I got to say, love Donny Cates, love Ryan Stegman. I was a little disappointed in this. Particularly because it's not just in Moon Knight. It's been in so many supernatural TV shows. We got it just off the top of my head. Buffy the Vampire Slayer. We got it in Penny Dreadful. I believe there was an episode of Lost that did it as well. There's been multiple shows that have done this thing where like, is this character actually in an insane asylum? And you have a character who's a doctor saying, is it crazier that you are a magic dude who is killing all these other dudes, or that you're in an insane asylum the entire time. And Donny Cates is a smart enough writer that I wish he had poked holes in that trope a little bit instead of leaning into that trope. So that was a bit of a bummer to me. But Ryan Stegman's art always good. I still like the classic 90s Image comic style of this comic book. So I'm not out or anything, but I wanted more of a level of meta awareness of what was going on.
Yeah, I agree with that. I will say I thought this was a well-done version of it. This was one where it was actually hard to tell which is real. I feel like in a lot of the sort of cliches of this, you're like, well, the fun one is the real one. The insane asylum's not the real one. But in this one is written and drawn in a way where you're like, it really could be either here. And honestly, we get sort of a reveal, but I sort of doubted the reveal a little bit because they really leaned into the insane asylum.
Yeah. I mean, you know, one of the tropes you forgot to talk about is the, you know, anytime you're in an insane asylum, you're hoping the A-team is going to show up and break out the, you know, one member so they can start fighting.
Yeah. That's a classic trope. And who's in it? Howling Mad Murdock is locked in.
Yeah, that's right. You're goddamn right. Yeah.
It's right in the name.
Yep.
And they love that episode of the A-team.
They trick him Mr. T into drinking milk.
Well, they trick Mr. T into flying because he hates flying. But
they put a drug in his milk.
Yeah,
because he loves milk, but he hates flying.
Well, of course, it does the body good. I mean, what are we doing here?
And then Face is really good looking.
That's right. That's right. Are we going to go through the whole thing? But yeah,
the cigar guy's like, I'm gonna have this cigar. Terrible.
Yeah, he loves it when a plan comes together. If we get,
then there's a woman who's there sometimes, and she doesn't say or do much.
Hey, come on, let's not undercut her. You know what I mean? Like,
I think the writers of A-Team did all the undercutting there.
That's fair.
Alex, it's a matter. Why did you put it on the hat?
Yeah. Anyways.
Doing something. You're talking about 18.
Yeah, anyways, I do think this is great, but it does jump around a lot, so it's enjoyable. I
can't believe that happened.
What happened?
This is too complicated. Do I really need – should I explain a very long, complicated thing on the podcast?
Nope.
No, we don't have time.
It's actually very short, and you're going to be grossed out. Are you ready?
Nope. Yep.
Okay, so my oldest kid, who is 13, had one remaining baby tooth that was not coming out. It was pulled the other day, and at the end, they were like, hey, do you want to take the tooth home? And she was like, no, I don't want to take the tooth home. And they were like, okay, sounds good. And then the guy came back a minute later and was like, well, here's your tooth in a tiny little chest and handed it. And we were like, what? What? Okay, fine, we'll take it home. And I decided I'd show it to my wife. And now, because nobody wants this tooth, over the past week, my wife and I keep hiding the tooth in different places where we can find it. Where... Busted. And I can't believe she hid it under that hat in the little treasure chest. Good hiding.
Gotcha. Nice. Yeah, we do that with other parts of our bodies in my house too. We hide them. In other
I know that's a weird, messed up thing. I'm sorry.
Little scabs. We hide our scabs. I'm very impressed
because I never would have taken that hat down. Other than,
you know, what's crazy is after you tell us that story about this. It seems like we got the wrong person we're talking to. You know what I mean? It seems like that Marnie is a real creative hoot and would be fun to try.
Sure is. Why don't we talk about another real creative quick,
could just an editing note. Let's. I know we usually would say, like, edit that out. I think that's the part we keep, and we edit out all the reviews. Keep
Swamp
people guessing.
Swamp Thing, Green Hell, number 3 from DC Comics, written by Jeff Lemire, art by Doug Mackey and Sean Moll. This is a post-apocalyptic old man Swamp Thing world, but it's also a little bit more of old man Justice League Dark, because we got Constantine in here. We got a new
Come on!
And some other stuff. So they're all fighting against the end of the world. Gross, appropriately gross horror book, I think.
Yeah, intense covers, very intense covers. Loved all the Constantine stuff. But yeah, you know, Lemire does, it does some creepy work, so.
This is a great read. Great, like, just absolute end of the world. Something Jeff Lemire has written a ton of across a lot of his different work, from Sweet Tooth all the way to this very book. Yeah. So it's a good story, and we pin a lot of it on a father and daughter in a nice way. I thought this was definitely a good short little 3-issue read.
Great.
Good stuff. Damn them cheese balls.
Damn them
number
6 balls.
From IDW, written by Simon
Spurrier. Come on, say the real one.
Damn them all, number 6. There written by Simon Spurrier, art by Charlie Adlard. This is a all-out magic battle happening in London, I believe. Pete, what'd you think about this?
This continues to be great. We got a lot of answers in this issue. New deals are made. Art is super tight bananas. This is very fun, enjoyable shit.
Of the books that coming out currently where demons are trapped in coins, this is the one I like better, I think. I like them both, but this one, like, I like sort of the very British language that is used in here. The characters seem very lived in and real. And we've had a little bit of a twist that I won't say at the end of this that I think is going to turn us into a whole new direction.
Absolutely. Torrent number 2 from Image Comics, written by Mark Guggenheim, art by Justin Greenwood. So in the first issue of this book, we met a new superhero who was targeted by her arch enemy. Her arch enemy killed her husband in front of her after finding out her identity, took her son hostage and brought him to his stronghold. And this issue, we go in some surprising directions. I kind of expected it would be like a raid Die Hard type thing over the course of the series. That's not the direction it goes in. It goes in entirely different directions in this issue, and we get a tease. It's going to continue to go in different directions in the next issue. I was on board from the first issue, but given all these twists, I'm all in now. What about you guys?
Interesting.
I agree. I like the twists here. And you know what this reminds me of? This is like a grown-up Kick-Ass.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an apt comparison? Like, it feels.
Yeah, we mentioned that with the first issue. I think you weren't here. But oh, nice. Yes, 100%.
Well, I thought I was really on it with that one, but I guess we're all the same, the three of us.
Pete mentioned it last time.
Yeah, I sure did.
Me and Pete have never been off the same page. LePage.
Oh, wow.
We're always on LePage.
Yeah, I just think that this does take some interesting twists, which is very enjoyable. You know, and it's also kind of a thing that you don't expect to see ever. So I don't really want to give it away, but the thing, the move she does at the end is like, wow. So interesting to see if where it goes from there.
Yeah, I know we're dancing around spoilers, but I think ultimately this is Mark Guggenheim writing at the top of his intelligence. And I mean that legitimately in a complimentary way, where it's not taking the easy way out of, okay, now she's going to fight her way up a tower for the next five issues. Instead, we get that out of the way in this issue, and then we move on to other things, which is harder to write, more challenging, but ultimately more interesting. GCPD, The Blue Wall, number 6 from DC Comics, written by John Ridley, art by Stefano Raphael. This is the final issue of the series, which has followed a bunch of rookie cops in Gotham. One of them has gone over the edge and is killing a bunch of other cops because of his treatment. Rene Montoya is directly going for him in this issue and dealing with some stuff herself, as well as the systemic problems that are happening in the GCPD. I was very iffy and very thrown about the direction in the last issue, but how do you all think this wrapped up? Good night, Pete.
Oh, thanks.
I like the way this book ended. I agree. It was, this book sort of touched a lot of edgier issues and sort of treated them sort of in your face, like didn't sort of sugarcoat them at all. And really just ran at them hard, let the characters do bad things across the board to themselves and others. So it was a raw read, I think, but I like the way it ended. I really like Renee Montoya. Great character that I wish we saw more of across all of DC Comics, even though she's sometimes the question and sometimes not. In this case, not. I like the way they talk about how Batman is bad for Gotham in this, in a good way, in an interesting way, that is. And just a great, gritty, sort of grounded in reality story about hard things, hard choices that police have to make here.
Yeah, this is tough because obviously we're talking about police, and you know, there's a lot of feelings around police brutality and all sorts of hot topics. So the problem is we had this interesting kind of setup
and hot pockets.
Yep. Great. Thank you. We had this kind
of topics.
We had this interesting kind of setup for the story. And I was hoping for something, I don't know, maybe that was going to say something or be something bigger. But at the end of the day, it was just kind of like, this is a fucking shitty system that will chew people up and spit them out, and life is fucking really hard. So I was kind of like, oh, all right. Well, I knew that. You know, I did appreciate, like Justin was saying, that they didn't shy away from some things, lean into them. But I was hoping for a little bit, maybe, different choices or something other than the reality of the shitty world that we actually live in.
I don't think, not to interrupt you, Pete, and I know you're not saying this, but I don't think we're going to get solutions for police brutality and systemic racism in a comic book. I think the idea here, if anything, was to present these ideas to comic book readers through the lens of Gotham City. The question in my mind is whether it was successful. And I think, maybe, maybe not. And part of the reason I say maybe not is how thrown I was by the fourth and fifth issues that took this turn into this kid essentially becoming Punisher because of racism, which just did not work for me. It was too much of a turn. It was too much of a turn into like both hardcore realism and comic book surrealism at the same time, which just did not gel. And I agree with you. I think this last issue on its own was a good Rene Montoya story, but I don't know, to the point that you're making, Pete, that it felt worthwhile or went far enough based on how far they went to the previous issues. So overall, I think a worthwhile series and a well-meaning series that didn't quite work across the board.
Yeah.
I have a completely unrelated question for you, Alex. For a while, we talked about the Flash 1 minute war. And in the last 3 or 4 stacks, it hasn't been here. Now, have you stopped reading it? Or are you trying to not talk about it with us because we kept saying how the Flash is fast?
Tower number 2 from A Wave Blue World, written by Cameron Johnson and Kelsey Barnard, art by Chris Cross. This is taking place in a world where there is a very realistic video game that a bunch of folks have been sucked into. And a surprise twist in this issue, we immediately get to see the world outside of this game and some people who are controlling it, something I was not expecting at all to happen. And we get a lot more fights. I know we were
Plus the Punisher Hawk that shows up.
There was, in fact, a hawk with a skull symbol on its chest. I'm curious to hear what you guys think about this one, because I know we're intrigued by the first issue. How do you think it was followed up on in the second issue?
Well, I still don't exactly know all the things that are happening, but as a fan of the Punisher, I thought a Hulk with a skull on his chest was pretty cool. So I was like, all right, I'll stick around for another one and hopefully get some more answers.
Yeah. Just real quick question. Do you think a Punisher bird would punish bird crimes, or would he help out the Punisher to punish human crimes?
Yeah, exactly. I think a little from column A, a little from column B, hopefully. You know what I mean?
Okay. Would then the Punisher bird have to be like, hey, Frank, can we go do some bird crimes now? Because we've killed a lot of human criminals, but like, you haven't really been focusing on the birds that I'm here for.
Well, hopefully if Frank's working with a Punisher hawk, he would, you know, assist in, you know, their community as well, you know.
So if you saw an issue where the Punisher's just killing birds, you'd be like, about time.
About time.
About time.
About fucking time. Great. This bird population is getting out of hand.
That's true, yeah. I know, and his family was killed by other owl mobsters, right? Came through and killed him. But there was an underlying issue that he had from fighting.
He was in the trees of the park, and a couple of stray bullets killed his family. They were
stray bullets?
Yeah, shout out to stray bullies.
Shout out to stray bullies. They were having a worm picnic. And his whole family died.
Hey, the thing with the worm picnic is you got to eat them fast because they're trying to get back in the ground.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're eating them.
Yeah, and if you only eat half, you got another worm, baby.
You got to give it time, though. You got to let it grow. Yeah. Or was that a line you were using if you're trying to pick up a bird? If you're trying to flirt with a bird.
Hey, man, you know me. I'm always going to the park and flirting with birds. Are we talking about Tower Number 2? What did you think about that book?
This comic, I don't quite understand how the world works. Mm-hmm. And this feels – we talked about some other books that are like, oh, this feels like it is sprung out of Squid Game. This feels the most like it sprung out of Squid Game. And just like, but what if it was a little more video gamey than maybe you think it would be? And that's where we are. But I just don't quite understand the mechanics of it in reading this. But it's the art is interesting and the action is good. So
I like it with another issue. I'll throw out I like it on an individual panel by panel basis, but I don't think the action connects very well. And there's a couple of too many things going on with the storyline to completely follow what's happening. But I don't know. I'm still intrigued by it. I feel like as they whittle down the amount of people that are in this game, it might be a little easier to follow. So I'm still curious to check out the third issue. Speaking of third issue,
I guess I would say the Flash is very fast.
Mm. Infernal Girl Red, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Matt Groom, art by Erica Durso. This is the final issue of this part of Infernal Girl Red, though she will be back. We finally get her inhabiting all of her power, fighting against this dude who has stolen the university she was going to from Earth and put it into space. One of the things that I loved about this book, though they're not very explicit about it, is it's clearly teeing up some big things for the massive verse, big mythology things that are going on, both with Inferno Girl Red and the enemy that everybody is seemingly going to be fighting in the massive verse. If you're wondering what the stakes are here, I think it lays those out pretty cleanly. And also, it gives a really tragic origin story for Inferno Girl Red.
Yeah,
exactly.
It was very emotional. It was really
anytime. Good.
I was just going to say, love the emotional kind of story. I loved all the dragon action we got in this. There's a cool anime feel to the art style. I am having a blast with this.
Anytime I read a massive book and I'm like, how do all these books just really do it? And I'm trying to crack the code. And I feel like it has something to do with just the guardrails are up on what type of story we're telling here. It's like straight superhero action, maybe inspired by some video game logic and pacing, where it's just like you're thrown into it. The superpowers and the power sets are pretty well defined in all these books across the board. Same here. And then adding in like great emotional moments like we get at the end of this, and just nice characters that talk to each other pretty clearly. So it's just that, to boil all that down, it's like just good comic storytelling is making every massive book good. Am I a genius for saying that? No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
Deceased, War of the Undead Gods, number 7 from DC Comics, written by Tom Taylor, art by Trevor Harriside and Luca Meyer. In this issue, Alfred, who is now the Spectre, goes back to Earth to get the cure for the zombie virus, something that they confusingly have not brought with them, despite the fact that they're dealing with the zombie virus.
I would have brought it. Right? I would have packed it. But you know when you're packing for a trip and you're like, I'm not going to need all this zombie cure. And then you're like, no, that's the one thing we needed.
Oh my God, I forgot it.
The one thing I needed, we didn't pack it.
That was my one problem with the ski trip.
I'm enjoying this series, but the entire issue, I was like, why do they not have any zombie cure on them when they know that zombies are a problem? And then Alfred is like, I got to go to Earth. And he comes back from Earth and he's like, guess what I got? Zombie cure. And they're like, thanks, Alfred. Great job.
Smile, Fred.
It's like his version of superpowered cucumber sandwiches.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's buttling. He's buttling on a very large scale.
On a cosmic scale.
Cosmic butler. Hello, spinoff. Let's go.
Great time. Why don't we move on to the next book?
Yeah, no, I think that this is just crazy stuff. I love the cyborg moment where he's like, I have all of Brainiac's powers. Is crazy. Amazing last panel. Yeah, I think this is just a blast.
Great horror moment when Damian gets infected with the anti-life. I thought that was awesome and scary. In general, I've loved this. I want more of this and DC versus vampires all day.
Immortal Sergeant, number 3 from Image Comics, written by Joe Kelly, art by Ken Nomura. This is about a cranky, racist, old sergeant who is about to retire. He has been teamed up with his totally liberal soy boy son, who he's taken around to a bunch of bars. But we get a reveal of what the actual plot is finally in this issue. Pete, you're digging this, so...
Yeah, I mean, you know, maybe I relate to it because my father is a ridiculous human being. But I just think it's one of those things where this is a fun kind of odd couple scenario, just kind of turned up to 11, where, you know, the old guy is right and also kind of like has a plan, and this young guy has kind of got to play along with all this madness. And there's a lot of over the top action, but also Joe Kelly does a good job of balancing some humor in there, and you're kind of laughing at the ridiculousness of it all.
Yeah, this book is wild. Really keeps catching me off guard with the choices that are made, and it feels really original. The art is totally works and is really interesting. I find it interesting, Pete, that you identify with the son in this, as our resident curmudgeon. Like it feels like you could identify with both characters, maybe.
Yeah, it does feel that way. Thank you for pointing that out. Also, the art is just crazy, type bananas.
Superman number 2 from DC Comics, written by Joshua Williamson, art by Jamal Campbell. In this issue, Superman is fighting against an army of parasites who are taking over Metropolis. Lex Luthor is buzzing in his ear, trying to get the team up together, and Superman, of course, doesn't want to do it. I really dug the first issue of this, and I really like the second issue of this as well. This is an exciting, propulsive Superman story.
It's like almost like a horror take on Superman. The art is much darker and moodier than a lot of other Superman books. And what happens is scary throughout, except for the like 3 or 4 pages where Superman meets a new character it's like a crazy introduction where it's like, who are you? Here's a bunch of information about me, and I'll say my name right as I leave.
I love the art on this. I feel like it's a fun, kind of cool, clean take on Superman. This was a blast. Loving the story, like this kind of whole Superman Lex Luthor back and forth here in this.
And for my recipe, I guess it's going to be Supermanicotti. And what you're going to do is you're going to take red kryptonite and go take
Don't interrupt time. Him. Keep going, Justin.
I'll have you know, I ran out of gas right after I said Supermanicotti. Yeah,
if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts we do, as well as our recipe blog, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to crowdcast, Facebook and YouTube. Come check it out. Rip Crowdcast. We would love to talk to you about comic books. Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the comic book shop.
That was really fun. I guess we'll call it Comic Book Club's One Bad Day.
Sweet.